Okay, so today X will be, for a long time, just a smooth manifold. And in the last lecture, we talked about gauge fields and currents. And for example, we have that a current, typically, the way that I was numbering the forms last time, is a D plus 1 form. And if we're doing the quantum theory, then the it's closed, even classically. So it has a cohomology class. And in the quantum theory, that cohomology class is constrained to lie in a certain lattice. And in fact, it's refined to some cohomology class in an integral cohomology theory. So let's, for a long time, take that cohomology theory just to be ordinary integral cohomology. And so we have also a compatible integral cohomology class Q, which I call the charge. So the current is a local object. It's given by a differential form. The charge is a global object. It's a cohomology class. And somehow we'd like to take the information contained in those two and build an object, which I'll call J. Well, in my mind I say hat, but I think that's called check. But anyway, we'd like to make that object J check, which contains this information and is somehow suitable for using in a field theory. Similarly, when we had the field strength, so the way I numbered it, that's a D form. And the way, in fact, that we at least got the electric charge to be quantized was to say that in the absence of magnetic charge, that this is not simply closed, but in the classical theory it's exact, but in the quantum theory we allow ourselves to sum over not just exact forms, F, so to speak, or gauge fields whose field strength is exact, but also which have a flux, you might call it, which is quantized in a similar way. So this is a sort of characteristic class, or flux maybe. Well, I don't think that's the right term, but characteristic class of this gauge field. And again, we want to have an object which carries that information, the global information, like that. So a lot of today's lecture will be describing a little bit how we try to construct such mathematical objects which marry this global information with the local information of a differential form. Now, the first attempt we might make is simply the following. Let's fix a degree Q, and let's look at what we mean to have a compatible closed Q form on X. So the subscript CL means closed Q forms, and integral cohomology class. So what does it mean to say they're compatible? Well, where can we compare them? We can compare them inside the real Q-dimensional cohomology. So if we have an integral class, it defines a real cohomology class. And if we have a differential form which is closed, then the Derome theory tells us that that defines a real cohomology class as well. So what we can do is form what's called the pullback of this diagram. And so this is some group, that's some group, and the pullback will be some group. Let me call it A sub Q of X, and I'll put a subscript H, the H meaning that we're doing this in cohomology. So what does it mean to take a pullback like this? It means that an element of this set is a pair of elements, an element in here and an element in here, which map to the same thing here. So you see, an element in here is exactly a compatible integral cohomology class and representative differential form. That's exactly what it means to form that pullback. So that would be the first way that we might just try to get something that makes compatible pairs. We would just get exactly that sort of pair. Now, what did we find in yesterday's lecture, the sorts of geometric object we used? Well, let's look at the degrees Q equal 1, and then we'll look at Q equal 2. Those were the two examples we looked at. We looked at Q equals 1 for the field strength and Q equals 2 for the current. So D equals 1 in both cases. And here, what we put in this pullback square, so here we have H1 with integral coefficients mapping to H1 with real coefficients. And here we have closed one forms. And what we put here was not just compatible pairs, but rather we put maps from X into the circle, but let me write it additively, 2 pi z. Okay. So, which color will we erase? I'm afraid to use the color. So if we have a map phi, but remember phi is only defined up to these shifts, then we get a one form, which is simply d phi. The fact that phi is only defined up to the shifts doesn't affect the fact that d phi is a well-defined closed one form. D phi will not be an exact one form, since that's not a function, but it'll have a cohomology class, which is, well, compatible with the integers, never mind the 2 pi. Right. So on the one hand, the map to the circle gives us a closed one form, and on the other hand, it gives us a cohomology class. That's just the homotopy class, really, of that map. So on the other hand, is this the pullback? You see, saying that this is the pullback means that anything we can put here maps to here. So in other words, we should have a sequence if we take maps from X R mod 2 pi z, that will map to this group I called A1H of X. And in fact, that map is onto. In other words, given a one form with integral periods and a compatible cohomology class, then we can actually find a map to the circle whose differential is that. We simply integrate the one form. So that map is certainly onto, but there's a kernel. So the kernel should be maps to the circle which have a vanishing differential. That means they're locally constant. And the cohomology class is also trivial. Well, that's not an additional condition. And so what we have is just locally constant maps to the circle. So we can write that as H0 of X with coefficients in R mod H0 of X with coefficients in Z. Okay, that's exactly the kernel. So these are locally constant maps. So if X is connected, it's just a face. Okay, so there's a little bit of extra information in here that's not captured by these pairs. It's a little bit bigger. What did we do for Q equals 2? So the basic diagram is that we have a two-dimensional cohomology class, and we have a closed two-form. And now we want them to be compatible inside the real two-dimensional cohomology. And given such a pair, what we actually constructed was a principal circle bundle with connections. So let me just call that a circle connection, like that. So by circle connection, I just mean a bundle over X, whose structure group is the circle, together with a connection. Now, of course, those don't form a set. I mean, there are a lot of different spaces we can put there, but we should think of those up to equivalence. If I have equivalent bundles with connection, they'll have the same curvature. That's what this map is. So this map is curvature. And on the other hand, they'll have the same first turn class. Let's call it the characteristic class. So again, we can ask, is that the same as this group here? And the answer is no. Again, this space of connections, this set of connections up to equivalence, that maps to this group of pairs consisting of compatible curvatures and first turn classes. But there's a kernel. So what's the kernel? Well, the kernel is a connection which has vanishing curvature. In other words, it's flat. And also the bundle on which it's a connection is trivial topologically. So they're exactly the flat connections on the topologically trivial bundle. And those are given by the cohomology group H1 of X with real coefficients divided by H1 of X with integer coefficients. So this is a vector space, and that's a full lattice. And so that quotient is, in fact, a torus. That's not, incidentally, the same as H1 with coefficients in R mod Z. H1 with coefficients in R mod Z are flat connections on a bundle which might not be the topologically trivial one. That's a group whose identity component is this torus. Okay. So we have that exact sequence. So the sorts of objects that we want to consider, in fact, are the ones that come here, not this group A. So this group A, just by pulling back and taking compatible characteristic classes and curvatures, that's not the group we want to consider. We want to consider this more refined geometric object. Okay. Well, those objects for arbitrary degrees in cohomology appeared in mathematics in about 30 years ago, so in the early 70s. And they appeared in two different guises. One is due to Cheeger and Simons, and the other is due to Delinea. And what they constructed is a group that, for any q, fits into such a sequence. So we'll call that group HQ hat of X, and it maps to these compatible pairs, and there's a kernel which is exactly the same torus, but in higher degree. So you should think of these as some sort of higher version, if you like, of maps to the circle or circle bundles with connection. This map is the map which is the curvature and the characteristic class. So for a circle connection, it's exactly what we call the curvature and characteristic class. For a map to the circle, the curvature is what you might call the field strength. It's just the derivative or logarithmic derivative of the map, and the characteristic class is the homotopy class, the cohomology class of that map to the circle. And then the kernel consists of flat things with trivial characteristic class. So there is a cohomology group here, and it has some kind of nice functorial properties. Okay. And in low degrees, we know what it is. I've told you what it is in degrees 1 and 2. In degree 0, incidentally, it's simply the maps from x to the integers. In degree 1, as I said, it's the maps from x to the circle. And in degree 2, it's the set of circle connections, mod equivalence. Okay. Now, what we need to be able to apply this in field theory is not simply this cohomology group, but the first point I want to make is that we actually need a theory of cochains and cocycles. Or we might call these sort of geometric representatives. So let me perhaps give you some examples where you know about cohomology groups. On the other hand, you know about geometric representatives. So for example, so here we could have cohomology group and geometric representatives. But I'll use the term cocycle. But I don't strictly mean cocycle, meaning a cocycle in a cochain complex. I mean it in a sort of more general sense. So for example, if we talk about the real cohomology of a space, then how do we represent that geometrically? Well, that occurs as closed differential forms. Closed differential forms. So there are lots of problems in which we get closed differential forms, which contain a lot more precise information than the cohomology class. For example, yesterday we saw that a current contains a lot more information than a cohomology class that roughly tells you a total charge, whereas the current tells you where charges are located. Many examples from geometry, of course. If we think about the K-theory of a space, a K-cohomology class, then we might think of a representative as being an honest vector bundle, and perhaps even a vector bundle with connection. Okay. Whereas a K-theory class is something more amorphous. Here's another example. We might think of, let's say, the first cohomology group of X with coefficients in, let's say, A, where A is an abelian group. For example, you might think of the cyclic group of order 2. So what is the first cohomology class with coefficients in A? Well, you might think of that geometrically as represented by a principal covering space with group A. So they're just principal bundles, if you like, with structure group A. So having a principal bundle, I would think of that as having a cocycle for a particular cohomology class, whereas equivalence classes of these, under some obvious equivalence, is what that cohomology group measures. Now, why is it important to have a theory of cocycles and so on, rather than just cohomology classes? Well, I think it's really because of locality. So, for example, let's just take this last example, and let's take A to be Z mod 2. So what we're talking about are double covers of a space. And let's take the space X to be just the interval. Well, up to equivalence, there's only a single double cover. They're all trivial. But let's say that I want to glue that to make a double cover of the circle. Well, over the circle, there are, of course, two double covers. One is trivial double cover, and one is non-trivial double cover. Well, I can get both of those by gluing here. But you see, if I only know the equivalence class here, and I don't know, you see, if I only know this up to equivalence, there's no way that I can sort of decide how to glue it. Equivalence classes are not local objects. They're not things that I can cut and paste. Whereas if I have this actual geometric object and I tell you, you know, how to identify the ends, then I get either this or this. And the reason that we get two different answers is because on the boundary, well, on the boundary, we just have two points here, and there's an automorphism there, which exchanges the two points. So if I glue in one way and then apply the automorphism, I'll switch between the pictures I get. So the geometric thing has automorphisms. It has a richer structure. And the kinds of objects that we need to do field theory have to be local. They have to be able to cut and paste them. And so we have to keep track of those. So that's why we need a theory of these things, which has cochains, cohomology, and so on. Now, that's a very familiar idea in topology. And of course, in topology, when you talk about real cohomology, integer cohomology, what have you, there are lots of different cochain models you have for a cohomology theory. For example, singular cochains are quite familiar. Check cochains are quite familiar. Alexander Spanier, there are many, many. And in some sense, for a given problem, sometimes certain ones are more adaptable than others. And it's important that, in a way, the theory be insensitive somehow to the cochain model. Roughly, the philosophy is that at the end of the day, in any problem, you're computing a number of some kind. And whatever choices of cochain model you make in between, it's not going to affect the number that you obtain at the end. Yeah, it does, but still, I just want to say that equivalence classes are not local objects.
No, but if you understand the equivalence classes over a point and over an interval, you can solve your circle problem.
Yeah, if you use relative cohomology or something. No, that's true. So, but you'll find yourself keep making more and more. Right, so you have to make the right equivalences at each stage. Right. So it's more convenient to just have cochains and then at each stage make the equivalence relation that you need. Exactly. So, for example, if we think about these groups here, then, what's the next group in that sequence? Well, that's what usually goes by the name of a gerb, a circle gerb with connection. And there are lots of different models floating around for that. And that's been written about by many people. And if I try to tell you who they are, I'll miss some of them. But we also need to know what they are in higher degrees. And some of those models won't generalize very quickly to higher degrees. And we'll also need to know what they are, not only for cohomology, but for K-theory, KO-theory, other sorts of theories. So actually, for a long time, I was struggling to try to figure out how to make a co-chain model, and I think, yeah.
So is the H2 variable the same as maps from X to CP infinity?
Well, maps to CP infinity, you see, for example, supposing I look at topological H2, then if we take a concrete model of CP infinity, then H2 as a cohomology group is the set of homotopy classes of maps. We could consider a particular map to be what I'm calling a co-cycle, a geometric representative. That's another sort of model. If we want to do it with connection, well, yeah, that's fine, but then you're going to have to tell me what the equivalence relation is to get that cohomology group with the hat, and that's going to be tricky to do with that particular model. Okay, well, we'll come back to a similar example. In any case, so I struggled sort of to understand how you build in a systematic way a co-chain theory for these objects which have differential forms, but finally, I think the ideas from homotopy theory really, I think, are the ones which are needed to make the thing right. And so so there is a forthcoming paper, I'm told, quite soon by Hopkins and Singer, which, well, it deals with a particular problem where they need to develop this cohomology theory. And sometime in the future, there will be a paper by the three of us which do it for general cohomology theories. So as I said yesterday, these lectures are describing applications of this theory before the theory is so systematically written down, all the parts of it are. So what I want to do today is give you, hopefully, some hints about how one might write down a co-cycle theory for these objects, and how you can introduce integration and other operations that we need. How general? Yes, I think so. Okay. So so here's a sort of first model. And it's one that probably for the first time is introduced. No, I think. Quite general. So so a cocycle for so a cocycle for an element of HQ hat of X. By the way, we call that differential cohomology, for lack of a better name. So we'll have differential K-theory, differential Bordism, whatever the theory is. Here it's cohomology, so we call it differential cohomology. It is a triple CH omega, where C is a co-chain for the integer cohomology class. So the diagram has sort of disappeared. But here you see we're meant to start with a q-dimensional integral cohomology class, a q form. So C will be a co-chain representing that class, and omega will be a q form, which is the form we start with. So the form should be closed, and this should be also a co-cycle. So this would be the data simply if we think about this pullback square. Let me just draw it here. If we thought about this pullback square, you see I want to take not a cohomology class, but a representative, a cocycle here, and I want to take here a cocycle. And so I have them. And what we're going to do is not just pull back these cohomology groups, but we're going to pull them back, so to speak, as cohomology theories. So I'll expand on that later. But what I mean is we're going to take a cocycle here and a cocycle here, which are compatible. But we're not just going to say that they're compatible. We're going to tell you how they're compatible. In other words, we're going to give an isomorphism of their images in here. That's the crucial point, is not just to take cohomology classes which agree, but to take cocycle representatives and give an isomorphism between their images in here. And so that isomorphism means that the difference between these, so that's omega minus C, but where I mean their image in here, that has to be expressed as being the same. So that means that that cochain, cocycle, is actually a co-boundary. So what we should give then is a cochain of degree q minus 1, so that's that delta h for homotopy, is omega minus c. Okay? And so that's the data, this triple satisfying these equations, that's the data that that is then a representative for what we want to put here. So it's a triple, simply like that. Okay. So, for example, I should show you how for q equal to 1, we get a map to the circle, right? Because this is supposed to represent a map to the circle. Well, better give us a map to the circle. So let's just see why this data gives us a map to the circle. Well, let's focus on this guy h. You see, h is then in C0 of x with real coefficients. And I'm thinking here of singular cochain. So that means that on my manifold x, every time I give you a zero chain, that's just a finite set of points with some numbers attached, then I have some real number, and it's additive. So in other words, for each point, I have some real number. So h is simply a real function, gives me a real function on the manifold. So h gives me a function from x to r. However, there's no claim that that function is continuous or anything. In fact, it's certainly not in general continuous. However, we have this equation, which tells us something about the differential of h. And so what that means is if we look at two points on the same component of x and we take a path gamma between them, that if we evaluate this equation on this one chain gamma, then what it says is that h of q minus h of p is equal to the integral of omega over gamma minus c paired with gamma. C is a one cochain, and the gamma is a chain, and so these pair to give a number. But remember that that number is an integer, okay? Because C was taken to be an integral cohomology. So if I put a 2 pi there, I suppose, like as I did yesterday, then e to the I h of q divided by e to the I h of p is the exponential of I times the integral of omega. And of course, the exponential of that is 1. Okay. So that says exactly that. Not that this function h is a nice smooth function, but e to the I h is a nice smooth function. So in other words, e to the I h is a map from x to the circle. That's now a nice smooth function. And its derivative is omega. Okay. So that shows you concretely how this triple of data recovers this description we have up there of a class. Yeah. I'm getting to that. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't told you the equivalence relation that gives you this cohomology group. I've just said that these are cochains, right? So I'm about to tell you that. Okay, and so that was the story for q equals 1, so I'll leave it as an exercise for q equals 2 to see that you get a circle bundle with connection. Basically, you can take h and you can integrate it around loops and exponentiate the answer, and then you'll see the holonomy of that connection. And if you know the holonomy, all the holonomies around loops, and they're compatible because we have a two-form here, that exactly tells you you have a circle bundle with connection. On the other hand, for q equals 3, this is a very different way than some of the other ways, check descriptions or sheaves of categories or what have you, of telling you what a gerb with connection is. It's just this triple of data, and we can do that for higher Q as well. Okay, now as Ron says, we need an equivalence relation on these triples, and so maybe I should say a word sort of about how we might think about this in the context of sort of by analogy of cochains. Okay, so let's suppose that we have a cochain complex, just in general. Okay, so we have some differential here, d. And let's suppose we want to look at, isolate the Q-th cohomology. So what we're going to do is cut off this complex by putting zeros here and replacing all Q chains by the closed, what are they called? Not boundaries, cycles, thank you. So here are the co-cycles. Okay, and then here come, again, the chains mapping to D and so on. Okay. And now, the thing that one might do here is to make a little category. So I'll draw it as a sort of linear space. And the objects are exactly these co-cycles, ZQ. So for example, we have the zero co-cycle, we have other co-cycles, A prime, and so on. The objects are elements here. And what's a morphism? Well, a morphism from A to A prime is, so A is a co-cycle, and B is a co-chain of one dimension lower. And the morphism goes from A to A prime if A prime is equal to A plus DB. So if the differential of B maps to there. So that makes a nice little category. And the equivalence classes in this category, so I equate two things if they have an arrow between them, the equivalence classes is exactly the Q-th cohomology. Okay? But having the category is a richer structure. For example, there are automorphisms of objects that go from A to A. So what are the automorphisms? Well, they're exactly the cocycles of degree Q minus 1. Okay? So we have a richer structure than just considering the cohomology because we have these automorphisms. Now, in fact, we can, you know, keep going and somehow formally think of that cochain complex as giving a higher category if we want. Or really, if we want to cut it off, then what we can decide is that two morphisms are equivalent if they differ by something coming from here. So in other words, we can decide that the morphism B is equivalent to B plus delta C for any C of degree Q minus 2. Sorry, I've run out of room. So in other words, we can take the morphisms to not just be cochains here, but cochains here up to D of cochains there. And that means the automorphisms, instead of being the cocycles, is now the cohomology group one dimension lower. So that's a typical way that we can think of these objects as being a category. Incidentally, in this context, what would we call a trivialization of this cocycle? A trivialization of a cocycle A is simply going to be a morphism from the zero cocycle to A. Well, that's simply finding a B, a cochain here, such that DB is equal to A. That's what we mean by a trivialization. Okay, so this is a geometric picture. And as I say, we're going to do this not necessarily from cochain complexes, but that's a sort of model picture for how we can, from if we have what I mean by having a geometric theory for a cohomology group. Right, so for example, if we think about this example with covering spaces, see, if we just have H1 of X, that's the set of covering spaces up to equivalence. But if we think of the category of covering spaces, then we have automorphisms. The automorphisms are given by the cohomology group one degree down, H0 of X with coefficients in A, that is locally constant functions with coefficients in A. Those act as global gauge transformations. Mathematicians would say deck transformations. Okay. So, as Ron said, we want to implement that idea in this context of these triples. And so I have to tell you then, what is a map of triples? So a map from CH omega to C prime H prime omega prime. So those will be equivalent. But not only will we say that they're equivalent, but I really want to think of it as a category with a map. Then this is given by S, which is Q minus 1 of X, Z, and T, which is in Q minus 2 of X, R. And the equations that we need are that C prime is C plus delta S. Omega prime is omega. So in all this story, the differential form, the curvature, is not going to change. omega prime is going to be still, and h prime is h minus s minus delta t. Okay, so that's in this context how we map triples. So those are the arrows in that picture. So the A's and A primes are these triples. The B's are these maps, S and T. And we also have an equivalence of maps. So namely, ST is equivalent to S plus delta E and T minus E minus delta F, where E is in CQ minus 2 with integer coefficients, and F is in CQ minus 3 with real coefficients. Okay, so there, spelled out for you, is then a category whose equivalence classes, I claim, are this group. So a nice exercise would be to prove that, to, for example, see if you can take the equivalence classes of those triples and fit it into this exact sequence. So the map, for example, to here, the curvature of such a triple is omega, and the characteristic class is the cohomology class of C. And if you want to see the kernel, well, then you should look at these triples where omega and C are both zero, for example, and then you go back there, and you'll see that up to the equivalent, that H has to be in the torus, I said. Yes?
So F never shows up in the
curve. This F.
Yeah.
Yes. And right. Now, if the index is negative, they're zero. Right.
And so there's some theories of prior curves. I mean, maybe there are different theories of prior curves, right? And some of them might stop at F and some of them might include.
Right. So, as I said, just if we go back to this model situation of a co-chain complex, you see, I cut it off here by saying we have objects and we have morphisms, and I made an equivalence relation on the morphisms, and I got a one category. But we might have said that actually these give me a map from one morphism to another, and then we would have put the equivalence relation here and cut it off. So formally, you see, we could think of it as a higher category. In homotopy theory, you might think that we have a space of maps, and we could look at an equivalence relation on maps to get a set, which is two maps are homotopy equivalent. We consider homotopy as the equivalence relation. We get a set of homotopy classes. On the other hand, we might get a one category of maps by deciding that the objects are honest maps and the homotopies are morphisms, but we only consider the homotopies up to homotopy of homotopies. But you see, we could go on. So both in the context of maps of spaces and co-chain complexes, those are things we can work with which have embedded in them this higher category structure. So algebraically, it's kind of hard to say what these higher categories are, whereas in these contexts, if we think of them as maps and so on, some of that structure is built in. Other questions?
So
it's just an exercise. well, I'm not going to be able to disentangle it now. Sorry. Yeah.
So then, so this equivalence relation between A and A prime may differ by degree, but you
have to want to be equivalent. Well, no, they're equivalent. Yeah, if I want to, if I want to get a set out of here, in other words, get in this picture the cohomology group HQ, then I consider two cocycles to be equivalent if they differ by coboundary. Ah, very good. Okay, so yes, okay. So there is a subtlety here which, or something I've sloughed over, which I'm going to go back and correct, and maybe that'll help. Other questions? Okay. I don't need it. I mean, the way I'm going to talk, I'm going to just. Yes, I want to think about them as one category. But, right, I'm just pointing out that once you have a model like this, we could start to make. So there is actually a co-chain complex we could make out of such triples, if we make the right co-chain complex, whose cohomology in degree Q is the thing we want. Right? I've just given it to you not as a Cochain complex, but I could have written it down as a Cochain complex. So I'll remark on that in a minute. But let me remark what I said before, that there are other sorts of Cochain models we might consider. So one is a check model. And I'm not going to write down in detail what that is here, but that's one that might be more familiar to the physicists. Certainly it's familiar, for example, if we talk about a circle bundle with connection. We know how to write down a check model. We make a good covering of our manifold. We trivialize the bundle on each open set. That gives us a one form on each open set, the local connection form. And on the overlaps, we have GIJs, transition functions with values in the circle, and they obey a certain condition, compatibility condition. So that's a check description in the case Q equals 2, and there are similar check descriptions in the higher for higher Q of these guys. Now another variation is more in the spirit of homotopy theory, which is, again, to look at triples, but to take C, which is here a cochain for a cohomology class. Let's take it not to be a singular cochain, but rather a map to some space. So C will now be a map to a space, let's say B, where B is a space that classifies Q-dimensional integral cohomology. So B classifies HQ with integer coefficients. So this is called an Eilenberg-MacLane space. And so one of the very pretty features of cohomology is that you have classifying spaces, and these cohomology groups are actually homotopy classes of maps from X to some fixed space. And so once we have that space, a geometric representative, a cocycle, is simply a choice of map. And then we can make a category by saying that if we have two such maps, a morphism between them is a homotopy. Okay. And so we have that nice picture. Okay. So we actually need base points. There's a technical point. So we have a zero. And then we can talk about self-homotopies of the trivial maps. You see, those are maps to the loop space. And so you enter into the realm of homotopy theory. And I want to think of this space as also equipped with a particular Q cocycle with real coefficients. That's going to be the image of the canonical guy here. And then we want to consider triples again, C, H, omega, where H and omega are the same types of objects as before. C is now this map. You see, this map carries the integral information, and we again have to write down the equation that says that H is a homotopy, so to speak, between omega and the integral information. Well, it's the real image. It's really the real image of that. And so that's carried by this I. So in other words, we pull back that cochain to a cochain on X, a real cochain, and then we can write that equation. So those triples, so these triples are another way, another sort of model we might make. But having made that model, we can see that we could do this in a lot more generality, now that Ezra left the room. But you see, B doesn't have to be an Eilenberg-MacLane space. It could be any space, really. It doesn't even have to be a cohomology theory. But it could be, for example, a classifying space for some other cohomology theory. And then we could make such triples. And so now you can start to see how we could do it in general. Yes?
So now you have pointed out that C has to be extended to the real. I'm very troubled
by the equation
because omega is a form.
Right. Yes, so there's another technical point I skipped over, which is that the way I want to think of singular chains is what are called smooth singular chains. It's one of those oxymorons. So a simplex in topology is a continuous map from a chain is a linear combination of continuous maps from a simplex into our space. But we could talk about smooth maps of a simplex into our space and take linear combinations of those. That computes the same cohomology theory. I mean, that's again makes cochain complexes that compute integer cohomology, but now we have smooth maps. And for the dual of those, cochains on those, there is a map from differential forms because we can integrate differential forms over such chains.
Someday down the road, you're
going to
make quantum theory, you're going to have some configuration spaces that are
No, in the quantum theory, you integrate over the space of equivalence classes. So remember, in the quantum theory, you see these are like gauge transformations if you want, but it's really this picture of a category. I mean, we map between objects. And in the quantum theory, you integrate over equivalence classes. So all those choices are going to... Okay. All right. Okay, so now let me answer Emmanuel's question about where I cheated here. So I said that in this basic pullback diagram, we want to think of doing that pullback in the sense of cohomology theories. And so what we're really doing is, let me write it in terms of co-chain complexes. We're really not pulling back cohomology groups, but this co-chain complex, that maps to the real co-chain complex. And what I wrote here before was simply the closed forms of degree Q. But I didn't write a cohomology theory whose Qth cohomology is the closed forms of degree Q. You see, that's what I should really write. And so what I should write here is a complex, which is zero for a while. Now that you guys are all into derived categories, you're swift with these complexes. And in degree Q, we put the Q forms on X, and then we keep going. Okay? So we truncate the Derome complex here. Now, what's the cohomology of this complex? Well, in degree Q, it's exactly the closed Q forms. We have nothing to mod out by. And in the higher degrees, we get the real cohomology. And in the lower degrees, we get zero. So for each Q, we can make such a co-chain complex. And we could consider the pullback, what goes here, for each Q. So we might get a co-chain complex depending on Q. Right? Put the dot there. Okay. So we get a co-chain complex as this pullback depending on Q. And so in that Qth co-chain complex, we could consider the Pth cohomology and the P co-chains. So really, the correct theory is bigraded. We not only have the degree of the cohomology, but we have the degree where we cut it off. And the group that I'm looking at here, the interesting group, the one that has the differential form information, is really the one that, in this theory, is the diagonal group. Okay. So if we want to do this as a cohomology theory and have certain sequences and so on, we should really think of this bigraded theory. Okay, so that's a comment. That now, that's relevant when I talk about how I'm going to build that category and what kinds of maps we're going to put. So I'm not going to spell that out in detail, but so I said we had this sort of category. And so here we have 0, and maybe here's some HX. So think of HX as being this triple CH omega. And I said that a trivialization is going to be a morphism like that. Now, there are different notions we might think of as trivializations of a cocycle. So let's think of the case Q equals 2. And instead of triples as cocycles, let's think of a cocycle as being an honest principal bundle with structure group the circle together with a connection. So what would I mean by a trivialization of a principal bundle with connection? Well, I might mean that I have actually a flat section. That is to say, I have a section of the bundle. So having a global section means it's topologically trivial. And not only that, but I ask that the section be parallel to the connection, the pull-down of the connection form be 0. Okay? That means the curvature had to be 0, for example. Or I could just ask that I have a sort of non-flat section. That means that the bundle is topologically trivial, but my trivialization might not be flat. It might have a covariant derivative. It might define a one form that's not closed. And therefore, this bundle didn't have to be flat. It might have had a curvature, but the curvature is an exact form, the differential of that one form. So those are two perfectly good notions of trivialization. If we think about this bigraded theory, and we take cochains for a fixed Q, and I do what I said over here, And I make this complex, and I do the Q minus 1 cohomology inside the one with twisting Q, then that would correspond to the notion of really having a flat section, of really trivializing it completely. But since I have this bigrating, I can, so to speak, shift from the Q twisting there to the Q minus first cutoff, and then we would get a notion of non-flat section. And so the types of trivializations that are appropriate for the gauge fields are the ones which are correspond to non-flat sections. So let me just say what those are in this triple model concretely. So if, let's say, A hat is a triple C H omega, and this is closed, in other words, it satisfies the equations that we had before, then a trivialization B is a new triple, I called it BI tau, I don't know why. So this triple, this has degree Q, Q minus 1, and Q. This has degrees 1 less, Q minus 1, Q minus 2, and Q minus 1. And the equations are that delta B equals C, D tau equals omega, and delta I is equal to tau minus B minus H. And there's also an equivalence relation on such trivializations, so you get a category of trivializations, etc. So that's what we mean by a trivialization. When we talk about a section here, we said we got a one form, which is the covariant derivative. And in this picture, that's this form tau. So tau is a sort of covariant derivative. Its differential is the curvature of the thing we're trivializing. Okay? Any questions? Okay. So now let me comment about doing this for other cohomology theories. I did already, in a sense, when I talked there. So what is a generalized cohomology theory? Well, it's some way of attaching to spaces, or some kinds of spaces, let's say manifolds, some, let's say, Z-graded ring. So it's a cohomology theory that has a multiplicative structure. And the main property it has, as we've said, is Mayer v. Torres, which tells us that it's local. In fact, you see in the 30s and 40s, there were lots of models floating around of integral cohomology. People didn't know they were the same. And finally, Eilenberg and McLean, Zilber, who was it, formulated some axioms for cohomology. And they proved that that uniquely characterizes cohomology. And one of the axioms is more or less Mayer v. Torres. And that's what I'm saying here. Another axiom was what the cohomology of a point is. And if we think about a generalized cohomology theory, then what we're allowing is that the cohomology of a point, well, that's a certain ring, that then that ring actually characterizes the theory. So if that ring is the ring of integer cohomology of a point, then it had to be integer cohomology. And that way you could compare all the different cohomology theories, singular, simplicial, check, whatever it was floating around. But now we also have the possibility of having more interesting rings to get more interesting cohomology theory. So in the case when we have integer cohomology, then this ring in degree Q, well, it's of course the integers if Q is 0, and at 0 if Q isn't 0. So that ring is fairly trivial. It's just the integers in degree 0. That's the ordinary cohomology of a point. But there are other theories that have more interesting ring. And the examples that we need are K-theory. And for K-theory, that ring is Z if Q is even, and 0 if Q is odd. The ring is the sum of those. The K-theory group looks like that. It's periodic with period 2. That's, of course, Bott periodicity. And for KO theory, also for symplectic K-theory, it's just shifted version, then we have KOQ of a point. Well, let's see, Z, Z mod 2, Z mod 2, 0, Z, 0, 0, 0. So it's periodic with period 8, and that's where Q is congruent to 0, negative 1, negative 2, negative 3, negative 4, negative 5, negative 6, negative 7, mod 8. So that's the ring for KO theory. Notice, by the way, when we tensor over the reals, which is what we do when we map the cohomology theory to differential forms, well, in the case of ordinary cohomology, we just get the reals in degree 0. In the case of K-theory, we get the reals in every even degree. And in the case of KO theory, we get the reals in every fourth degree. Now, any cohomology theory has a map to real cohomology, but it doesn't map to, so to speak, scalar real cohomology. There's a natural map which goes to the real cohomology, but tensored with this ring, the animal point. So these are both graded rings. That's a graded tensor product. So it maps to cohomology with coefficients in this ring of a point. And since this is over the reals, it's a vector space, it's really this ring tensored the reals already. So for example, what does that map look like in K-theory? Well, for K-theory, this ring, gamma of a point tensor the reals, I've told you what it was additively, and multiplicatively, it's just power series on U and U inverse, where the degree of U is 2. So if we just call U a generator of this group K2 of a point, U inverse is K minus 2 of a point, then we can just take arbitrary power series. That's the cohomology. Okay. This U, incidentally, U inverse really is the Bott periodicity element. U inverse represents an element in K minus 2 of a point. That's the same as K naught of the 2-sphere. So in other words, it represents a bundle over the 2-sphere. It's the Hopf bundle over the 2-sphere. That's what represents U inverse. So you might think of U inverse as the Hopf bundle, Hopf-Lyme bundle, O of 1 over the 2-sphere, CP1. Okay, that's the Bott element. So what is this map? Well, this map is just the Chern character. So the Chern character maps K-theory of X in degree Q, let's say, to degree Q elements in the real cohomology with coefficients in this ring. How many parentheses I've got there? Okay, so let's say that we do this in degree 0. Okay, so we have to map to something of degree 0 in that ring. And so if we have a bundle, a K-theory element, I don't know, let's call it X or something. So X is represented by a bundle or difference of bundles. Then, well, we have its zeroth Chern character. That's just the rank that sits in degree 0. And then we have the first Chern character. That's a real two-dimensional class. But we multiply by U inverse, so we get something of total degree 0. And then CH2 of X, U to the minus 2, etc. So we really think of everything as always being Z-graded rings, and we put in the coefficients, the U, the Bott periodicity element. That makes it quite nice when you're computing things. So what is differential K-theory? Well, we want to make these triples. And as I said, we can really think of maps to a space. And so let's take, let B be a model for z cross b u. So I'm going to tell you what differential k0 is. I'll just give you a model for it. Where, so the classifying space for k-theory, k0, is the space topologists call z cross b u. And there are lots of nice models. In fact, there are lots of nice smooth models. For example, we can take the Fredholm operators on a complex separable Hilbert space. That's a very nice manifold, open set in the Banach space, and it has the topology of z cross bu. So that's a perfectly beautiful space. And we'll take this class iota, will be now an element in H of the space with coefficients in this base ring for k-theory of degree 0. And we can take it, actually, to be the Chern character class of some sort of universal connection there. So we might think of roughly there being a universal connection there, and this being some kind of Chern character class. And now, for a model of differential k-theory, we can take triples, where C is a map from the space X into this classifying space, and H, this homotopy, is a cochain in X with coefficients in this ring, which I'm getting tired of writing, of degree minus 1, and omega is a differential form, again with the same coefficients, of degree 0, and it satisfies the same equations we had before, that d omega is 0, and delta H is omega minus C star I, minus that pullback. On the other hand, there are other kinds of cocycles we might like for differential k-theory. So, for example, supposing we have simply a vector bundle with connection, vector bundle, complex vector bundle with connection, I want to say that that is also a perfectly good cocycle for differential k0 of the space X. So for example, given such a vector bundle with connection, we can construct such a triple. You see, we can let C be a classifying map for the connection. So we can find a map from X to B, which classifies that connection. That is, it pulls back this universal connection to that connection. We can let omega be the Chern character forms of this connection, and we can let H be a differential form, which are the Chern-Simons forms, comparing the Chern character of this pullback of the universal guy with delta. So we could map between these models. I should also say that these sorts of models of differential k-theory and some of the ideas there appear in some of the literature and works of Lott and other people. I didn't say an equivalence, so that point I've been careful not to say. I didn't say what equivalences are. I've just told you that we could map these kinds of cocycles to these kinds of cocycles by making a choice of classifying map. But I didn't tell you what an equivalence is here. You see, it's easier to say in this kind of model what the equivalence is. So a systematic theory might use that kind of model rather than the other. On the other hand, in geometric problems, for example, when we have a D-brain inside a 10-manifold and it comes equipped with a vector bundle with connection, we'd like to know that gives us a cocycle for differential k-theory. So we need to know that those things are also valid cocycles for differential k-theory. Okay. Oh. Keep losing track of questions. Okay. So hopefully that gives you some idea of how you might make a geometric theory of these objects that marry integral cohomological information, whether it be integral cohomology, k-theory, or what have you, with differential forms. And now I want to make just two more general comments about that. One is that there's a multiplication. So if we start with a cohomology theory that has a multiplication, they don't all have multiplications, For example, symplectic K-theory doesn't have a multiplication. If you tensor two symplectic bundles, you don't get a symplectic bundle. But if you start with one with a multiplication, then you get a multiplication in the differential theory as well. So the differential of degree Q times differential of degree Q prime, say, maps to differential of degree Q plus Q prime. So if you think of that pullback square, we have the multiplication in gamma in one corner, and we have the multiplication of differential forms we always have in the other corner. And those are, well, those have to be made compatible in some way. And then we induce a multiplication here. But the multiplication here can be sort of non-intuitive. For example, if we just think about ordinary cohomology, then there's a map from H1, tensor H1, differential to H2. Well, what is H1? H1 is a map to the circle. And so this says if you take two maps from a manifold to the circle, what you can construct is a connection on a circle bundle over the manifold. So you can multiply two maps to the circle and make a connection on a circle bundle with manifold. A circle bundle over the manifold. Also, these multiplication maps are not only meant to be multiplications on cohomology, that's what was done in the Delinea theory and the Cheeger-Simons theory, but also multiplication on these cocycle representatives. So we really need to know how to multiply cochains. Okay. All right. And then the other feature we need is integration. And again, integration in the sense of cochains, not just in the sense of cohomology classes. Now, in fact, you know, in the general cohomology theory, you have integration over arbitrary maps. You have a push-forward map. I mean, cohomology is functorial under pullback, but you have a sort of wrong-way map going this way. Mike? Right, so you have to build that. Well, it's also true that, I mean, if we think about cohomology, if you map differential forms to real cochains, and you wedge product differential forms, that does not map to the cup product of cochains. So you have to choose a homotopy there. So I think the commutativity will be hidden in that homotopy. I mean, you have to choose that to already, right? So to make them compatible, that's what I mean, you have to choose. Yeah. Tony?
There's a problem usually with the theory here, the product of cochain model. In the cochain model for the link model.
Well, again, these things are only going to be associative up to, you know, in the sense of...
Yeah, they're not always only in two dimensions. So it's a non-associative product, but you want to on the cochain.
It's an associative product on the cohomology,
on
right?
The model, but not on the cochain.
Well, just as it isn't in ordinary cohomology. Even before we put in the differential, it's not an associative product on cochains, right?
Yeah, no, but the point is that, for example, in the usual cohomology setup, we have a whole family of products on cochains, which each member in this family induces the same product on the cohomology classes. And the defect in the associativity for each member of the family actually varies with the parameter you can make it as small as you want.
Okay, I don't think I have a good answer for that. You have a question? Okay, so the examples of integration that we really need are when we have an inclusion, and also when we have a fiber bundle. And in fact, any general map you can factor into these two cases. And so how do you push forward, you know, in these cases? Well, again, you want to do the push forward in cohomology and also the push forward in the sense of differential forms and make them compatible. So let me just say a few words about that. So if we have a submanifold W, then, well, pushing forward differential forms, that's the sort of thing we discussed yesterday. The natural thing you get is not a smooth differential form, but you get some kind of distribution. And so clearly, to push forward and map smooth forms on W to smooth forms on X, you're going to have to choose some kind of bump form there. So to stay within the category of smooth forms, you're going to have to make a choice when you push forward of some kind of bump form. Okay. If you want to push forward cohomology, on the other hand, then what you need is some kind of tome class of the normal bundle. So the main thing here is to use the tome isomorphism. So we need a tome class on the normal bundle. Now that requires, as I mentioned yesterday, that the normal bundle be oriented. And on the other hand, we have such a push forward in case the normal bundle isn't oriented, but where you end up with is not the ordinary cohomology, but some twisted version of the cohomology, twisted by the orientation class. So perhaps I should have said that cohomology theories admit twistings, all sorts of twistings, and there is always a, on a manifold, there's a canonical twisting, or when you have a vector bundle, by the one-dimensional twisting by an orientation class. And so the natural tome isomorphism actually incorporates that twisting. So for ordinary cohomology, the orientation class of a real vector bundle, that's the first Stiefel-Whitney class, the determinant Lyme bundle. You need to have consistent volume, notion of volume, that's measured by the determinant. But when we go to K-theory, then we have something different. We have not only W1, it's really a pair, consisting of W1, but also capital W3, the third Stiefel-Whitney class. And for KO, we have little W2, and so on. So there are different notions of orientation depending on which theory, and those come in to trying to make tome isomorphism. So a notion of orientation in the differential theory really should be thought of as a choice, not only of that topological orientation, but here also of this bump form. You need both. That would be an orientation in the differential theory. Now if you have a fiber bundle, that means we should think of that as a family of manifolds. So I'll call the total space X mapping down to T. Think of it as being proper. In other words, the fibers being compact, so we can actually integrate. So we're talking about an integration over the fibers. Well, if this is oriented in the usual sense of orientation, then there's no problem in integrating differential forms. So we really do have a map of differential forms that lowers degree. And on the other hand, if we have cohomology class, then we can also, again, push it forward modulo the questions about orientation. Now, those are not compatible, and the push forward here is not compatible in the following sense, that if we have a class, let's say, I called it before, a check inside the differential theory for some gamma, then, and this has curvature omega, then the curvature of the integral of A hat over this fiber bundle, after I integrate, the curvature doesn't, taking curvature does not commute with push forward. So it does when we're doing cohomology, in fact, but it doesn't in general. And the curvature of the push forward is not the integral of the curvature, which would be the integral of omega, but rather it's the integral of omega times something. And that something we might think of as some kind of A hat genus, but depending on the cohomology theory gamma. So, for example, when gamma is ordinary cohomology, this is just one. That doesn't enter. So if gamma is cohomology, then this A hat gamma is one. But if gamma is KO theory, let's say, then this A hat class is the usual A hat class. And if gamma is complex K-theory, then this A-hat class is the A-hat class times e to the 2 pi I eta or something. Maybe it's pi I, actually. Eta, where eta is the curvature of the determinant bundle of some spin C structure. So there's an extra piece that comes in. Never mind about that. But in any case, each cohomology theory, we sort of have that piece. So the integration on forms is not really compatible with taking curvature. We have that discrepancy. That's some form of the Riemann rock. Also, I should say that if we want to integrate over here, for example, in K-theory, then it's not enough just to have an orientation here. We need, in some sense, some kind of metric. For example, this form A hat is as a differential form depends on having some metric data on the fiber, some family of Riemannian manifolds, not just topological manifolds. So, as I say, there's some way to develop this into integration, and then we get kind of interesting maps. So the integration computes some interesting geometric quantities that are known in the context of the kinds of objects that we've been talking about. Okay, so that's the end of the general discussion about this differential cohomology. You should take that all as being entirely thin air until it's written down systematically. So think of that as a dream rather than as rigorous mathematics. And I want to spend the last 10 minutes telling you how to recast what I said yesterday about gauge fields in this language. But let me pause for a second for any questions about the general theory. Yeah? Oh. The curve, yeah, the curvature, yeah, so. You also have a sort of slant product on cochains, I mean, the integration of cochains. But one way that you might think of doing that, you see, just imagine that I had a general map, say, x to y. Then what we can do is factor that map. You see, just think of X as a compact manifold or something. Then just embed X into some large Euclidean space and just take the maps X to Y together with that embedding. And that gives an embedding into the product. And then we can project onto Y. So in that way, an arbitrary map, might have been a fiber bundle, is factored into an embedding and a projection. Okay. And so for the embedding, we have to extend the cochain, right? And for the projection, then we have to do something. Well, when we have a projection like this, we can take slant product. So there's a way of taking slant product, which works perfectly well in cochains, differential forms. And so that's really what the map is here. And then, well, the map here, we have to choose a tome class. And so the way to set it up is to choose a general sort of notion of what a tome class is, meaning we choose a tome class in this differential theory. And so then we do that with the triples, the tome isomorphism. So that's the way to set it up. Other questions? Okay, so let me summarize what I said yesterday about gauge fields and say what they are in this language. So if you believe that dream, then what I said yesterday is that when we go to look at abelian gauge fields, which might have arbitrary degrees, and we want to put those into a functional integral and incorporate charge quantization, then the kinds of local objects that we use and the kind of action we write, the fields are these sorts of objects, thought of as these categories. So what's the data to describe the gauge field? Well, we're going to have a degree, which is the degree of the various field strengths. And we'll let that be, we might have several degrees at once. We might have several field strengths. So that's D. We'll need a coupling constant, E, which again, okay. We'll also need, now to describe the charge quantization, we'll need a choice of a cohomology theory. So as I said, that choice is telling you about the quantization law of the charges for those particular gauge fields. And then we also need some sort of normalization. Which is a differential form, or rather a set of differential forms, And so these are forms of degree zero. And these are differential forms, which depend locally and functorially on X. And X, perhaps, is, for example, a Riemannian manifold. So these are just a certain normalization that you'll see put in a minute. But maybe so it's not so mysterious, I'll tell you that in the case when gamma is integer cohomology, then these forms are simply 2 pi. That's a constant zero form. And more interestingly, in the case when this is K-theory, then this form is 2 pi times the square root of the a hat genus. So think of X as being a Riemannian manifold, and then the a hat genus is a differential form. It's 1 plus a 4 form plus an 8 form, but again, we take the 4 form and multiply by u to the minus 2, the 8 form multiplied by u to the minus 4, so that we get something of degree 0. So that's just a normalization that we use. I'll explain the reason in a minute. And there's one more piece of data, which almost comes for free, but we just need a map from the first degree cohomology in gamma to ordinary first degree cohomology, and also a map from the second degree cohomology to there. So for example, if this is ordinary cohomology, there's nothing to say. If this is K-theory, then this map is a kind of determinant, and that map is also a sort of determinant. But okay. So anyway, that's the data. And now, what's that? Yeah, to Z. So in K-theory, well, this is K2, but think of it as K0 by Bott periodicity. If I have a vector bundle representing an element, I just take its determinant bundle. That's a complex line bundle which represents an element of integral H2. Okay. For K1, think of that as a map to its unitary group. I just take literally the determinant and get a map to U1, which is an element of H1. Okay, there's one more. Okay, so then what are the various pieces of data? So what are the ingredients or the fields? So first of all, we have the currents, the magnetic and electric current. And I said that those were refined to be in this theory. And not only are they refined to be cohomology classes, but really we need them to be cocycles. So we'll think of this as a differential cocycle of degree d plus 1. Again, it might be a multi-degree in the differential theory for gamma. So remember that the magnetic current, if the field strength has degree d, then that's f has degree d, then df is the magnetic current, and so that has degree d plus 1, and we're refining it to be in this gamma theory and to be an actual cocycle. And similarly, the electric current is a cocycle of the proper degree in the same theory. Okay, so those are the currents, and remember, we have a map from this differential theory that, even on the cohomology class, it doesn't depend on the particular cocycle, that gives us the charge, which is Q, and it also gives us a differential form, which is the usual current. And that differential form gets divided by this omega x. So that's where you see the normalization. So what appears, for example, when you deal with Ramon-Ramon fields, which have to do with K-theory, what appears is the current, as the field strength, we'll do this with field strengths in a minute, and what appears also as the currents is not just the ordinary Chern character, but divided by the square root of the a-hat genus. Okay, and so what is the gauge field? So these are the currents, and now the gauge field. Now remember that the gauge field ended up being a trivialization of the magnetic current. Well, here the magnetic current is a cocycle, and I've told you what it means to have a trivialization. So this is a cochain, and these kinds of non-flat trivializations we could really think of as a cochain 1 degree lower. It's a non-flat trivialization of this magnetic current.
You call it H.
I meant to. Sorry. Okay. And the this doesn't have a characteristic class unless the magnetic current is zero, but it has a covariant derivative. So that's a D-form, which is closed in the case that the magnetic current is zero or is flat, but it's in general not closed. And the covariant derivative is, again, the natural form that we got before, but normalized by this omega x. Okay. And I said before that when we talk about cocycles, we have an equivalence relation. And if we talk about cochains, we similarly have an equivalence relation. And so let's let F check A be the equivalence class of this. So this is like a particular connection, and this is like its class up to gauge transformations. Okay. So this is the gauge invariant object, and this is the actual connection, if you like. Okay. So So the space of fields for fixed currents J, the space of fields in our field theory is the space of these HX, which is to say the space of these cochains. So that, as I said before, is a category. And when you think about doing the functional integral, you should think about integrating over the equivalence classes. That's like the gauge equivalence classes of those objects. And when we write down the action, we better have written down something that only depends on the gauge equivalence class. So finally, what I have to write for you is the action. Well, let's think of writing the action not for a single manifold X, but let's write the action for a family of manifolds. So that's going to be one of these pictures, X over T, where I just think of T as some parameter space. If you're doing the functional integral, it might be the space of all equivalence classes, whatever. And X is being, the total space is being, right, for each point T in here, the fiber is a particular sort of manifold X. Okay. And to write down the expression I'm going to write down, we need the proper orientations. And I have to write down the exponentiated action. So the first term is the exponential of the kinetic term. And that's simply the integral of FA when star. So that's the usual term, except remember that this field strength, F, is in general, if the magnetic current isn't zero, it's a covariant derivative. It's not necessarily closed. In any case, it's a global differential form, and so this makes perfectly good sense. Of course, I have a metric around to be able to take the star operator. So that's no problem. And in the case when k is bigger than 1, we have more than one gauge field. This just means the sum of the integrals over the various pieces. Okay. So these are ordinary differential forms. And then remember that if we have electric current, what electric current does is add a term, a factor, in the exponentiated action. And this factor is exponential minus 2 pi I, the integral over this fiber bundle of the electric current times the gauge field. So last time I wrote that, well, in the classical theory, it was a product of a differential form. The current is a differential form, and the field and the connection itself is a differential form. Now I'm writing it as a product in this differential version of cohomology. So it's a product of the refined electric current as a cocycle in the differential cohomology, and also of the gauge field. So this is really A. Now remember, this notation F is the equivalence class of A. And so what I'm saying is that that answer really doesn't depend on A. It just depends on A up to equivalence. And so we can write it this way. After all, that answer is a number, you see. These are cocycles, but we've integrated down to the lowest degree where the answer is a number. So it wouldn't make sense to say two numbers are equivalent. Either they're equal or not. And so if I change the representative A, if I change my gauge transformation, the number I get is the same. So here I'm using the multiplication in this differential cohomology as well as the integration. And the answer that you get, So maybe I didn't emphasize enough that this integration is a map of co-cycles and really a map of categories. And so this J is closed, whereas this F, remember, is a trivialization of JB. And so this product, then, is a trivialization of the product of the electric current and the magnetic current. And so this whole thing is a trivialization of what I get by integrating the product of the closed guys, the co-cycles, which is the electric current times the magnetic current. Now, if you look at the degrees, then this product has degree n plus 2. And I'm integrating over something of relative dimension n. So what I get on the base is something of dimension 2. I get something of degree 2 inside the gamma theory. But remember that I snuck in this map to ordinary integral cohomology. So I haven't put that in the notation, but I'm applying that map. Think of that as some kind of determinant, Pfaffian. I'm applying that map and then getting something of degree 2 in the... They induce maps with hats on them. Right, so I'm applying the induced maps with the hats on them and getting something in differential H2. Well, that's just a circle bundle with connection. So I can think of that as a complex line bundle with connection. And this is a trivialization, again, a non-flat trivialization. And so this is just a section of that bundle. And so that's the picture that we had last time in the one example that we could do with ordinary differential geometric objects, where in the case when D is equal to 1, that in the end we got a section of a line bundle with connection. And so that's the same picture here. To get this, here I get something of degree 1 in the base, and again I apply that first map to get that. Yeah, Dave. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah. So if I do it in a family, right, I'm pretty great. Yeah, exactly. Yes? FA is a differential form. So when I have a cocycle, I get a cohomology class in a differential form. Here I have a trivialization, so it doesn't carry a cohomology class, but it still carries a differential form. The differential form isn't closed anymore. It's like a covariant derivative rather than a curvature. So that's what I called FA. The F check means the equivalence class, the sort of gauge equivalence class of that field. So that carries all the information. And that's what we need to multiply by this J. Really, you could think of this, as I said, as J times A, but in the end, it's just a point in the set, so it just depends on the gauge equivalence class. Yeah?
So if you vary gamma, two things change.
If we change gamma to get a different theory, you mean, how does the choice of gamma affect this? Well, I
mean, you're going to argue, I suppose,
well, in certain theories. So what I'll argue next time is that if we do type 2, that the B field, for example, in type 2, which is something of degree D equals 3, and the B field being the gauge field has degree D minus 1, which is 2, but it's a degree 3 object, that you should think of in cohomology. Okay, but the Ramon-Ramon fields, you should think of, let's say when B is 0, you should think of that in K-theory. And if B isn't 0, then there's some twisted form of differential K-theory twisted by that B field thought of in differential cohomology. So that's right. And then the fourth lecture will be the case of type 1, where I'll argue that the field there should be thought of where gamma is K-O rather than K. So as I said, the choice depends on sort of physical inputs that especially if this is meant to be an effective field theory describing some more fundamental theory where you have more inputs.
But I guess because you put that up, megapractor,
yes.
Not
well, the objects are somehow different. So I'm not sure quite how to compare what you get. Well, maybe after you see the examples, it'll become more clear that this integral really looks quite different. All the cohomology theories are somehow the same after you tensor with the reals, as long as we change that ring. And so even with the rationals. So that means after clearing some denominators, we could re-express everything always in terms of cohomology, let's say. Right? So it's really a question of, you know, some integers that you've cleared in denominators, you know, and that's what the difference is between these various things. Yes, Ezra?
So we look at the linear theory here, but if you wanted to look at the non-linear theory, you probably do.
Well.
But it's well known that to do these integrals at the equivalence classes, physicists like it using ghosts and things like that. So I'm just wondering if anybody has looked at ghosts in studying these actions or in the.
Wow. Sorry. I don't think I have anything intelligent to say about that.
Your talk maybe is that when person gets two categories or three categories, maybe he has actually ghosts integrating.
Well, before we go there,
the traditional theory is for one.
I mean, traditionally, when you have an abelian theory, I mean, the picture is you have a vector space, as I said yesterday, a vector space with a quotient, or maybe an affine space with a quotient. And so there, you know, you're integrating over an affine space, and that's where, at least formally, you're supposed to be able to do something good. I mean, it's roughly a free theory, right? This is really quadratic, and that's linear. So despite the highfalutin context, it's really a sort of free theory in the abelian case. Now, what non-abelian things are, you know better than I do, that when you start to do cohomology past degree one in the non-abelian world, right? So I'm not sure. I wouldn't say anything about anything non-abelian here. Other questions?
Before people leave,